This week on Nomex Radio, Dakar, Cars We've Driven, and Dave the Trimmer.
Brought to you by Nineworks.co.uk, the fastest growing online Porsche community, supported by the Nineworks Marketplace. Nineworks Radio is your dedicated Porsche and car podcast, hosted by Lee Sibley, Andy Brooks, and Max Newman. Nineworks Radio is carefully produced with special input from experts around the industry and powered by our valued members of the Nineworks Driven Not Hidden Collective.
Andy B, how are you, mate?
Yo, I'm good, Miss Sibley. How are you?
Yeah, I'm dandy. Max is away this week. I think he's working late. So it's just you and I this week, mate, along with a little guest a little bit later on.
Yeah, we've got Dave the Trimmer, as he's known. I don't know what his surname is. It's infamous.
So it's Dave the Trimmer from the eponymous business.
Dave the Trimmer. Yeah.
Very good. So we'll speak to Dave very shortly. So I'll say, what have you been up to last week, Andy? We've both been driving different cars, so I think it'd be nice to dive in and talk about that. You've driven a 40th anniversary.
I have. And that makes me immediately think about the seats in the, because we've been talking about Dave the Trimmer, seats in the anniversary, and how different they are to your 997 sports seats in your car.
Yeah, they're very different.
Yeah, and your description of what a 996 sports seat is that you sit on it rather than in it.
Yeah.
So yeah, very different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was my immediate sort of thought. But otherwise, very different cars. Again, everything's different, isn't it? But it's good to drive it. Thank you.
Wicked. So yeah, removing the fact that I owned the car, so just looking at it kind of in a wholesome way, the 40th anniversary 911, someone says to you down the pub, Andy, what do you make of those cars then? What's your response?
What's my response? It felt quite very resolved.
Okay, yeah, wasn't expecting very that
resolved.
Retort.
The sort of, you know, there's lots of, I'm trying to think of the word, not seniority. What's the word that I'm looking for?
Superiority?
No. Grown up. Feels very grown up.
Yeah.
But very responsive engine-wise at that, because it's got the X51 power kit on it, isn't it?
That's it, yeah.
And you can really feel that. It's a grunty little thing.
Isn't it?
Well, it's just a grunty thing. And it feels good throughout the rev range. It's got a nice bit of freedom up the top as well.
Yeah.
So, power-wise, great. But otherwise, the car feels, very resolved, very mature. So there's, everything feels bolted together well. I'll tell you, a big difference between your two cars is the gear change. So the 40th. Feels
like butter, isn't it?
Butter, by comparison. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Where your one feels like frozen butter. Little green feels like
that's
frozen
incredible.
Butter.
That's absolutely incredible. Oh, I love that.
It's kind of like sticky butter.
Yeah, it is, and it takes a bit of wedge to move it. And actually, so the 40th, and I just did a video on it. The 40th went into storage over the weekend.
Yeah.
With John, so he's Sportline Cars on Instagram if anybody wants to get on the storage hype. So in any case, Laura and I, we took both 996s over to Devon and back for the day, and Laura was driving Little Irish.
Yeah.
And she was saying the shift in air is not nice, and I've probably got used to it, I guess, but it is quite bulky.
I'm sure of it. It's cables. That's what your car needs.
I agree, Andy, to be honest. It's something I'd really like to look at next year, without a doubt on that, because it's a crucial touch point. It has the short shift, but it's how it shifts that where that motion could be improved on. But Yeah, obviously it's gone into storage, as I said. So I want to do this comparison between the two cars, because I think as you've slightly seen now, there's a load of differences.
Oh, it's huge. Cars.
And it'll be interesting to dive into, because they're both rear wheel drive manual Carreras at their heart.
Yeah.
But very different. I kind of look at it that Little Irish, if you could kind of personify those two cars, the green one is Woody from Toy Story, right? Been around the block, everybody knows him, he's got the swagger, got whatever. And then all of a sudden, as of April, this Buzz Lightyear's appeared, basically. Do you know what I mean? This GT silver car has appeared that's a bit more technical and, you know, probably...
It's brilliant. I love it.
Ostensibly better in every way. However, there's nothing wrong with the old thing. So I kind of look at it that my two cars, I've got like a Woody and a Buzz Lightyear. Does that make any sense?
I love it. I think it's perfect.
It's kind of how it is. So look, maybe on the comparison video, you get involved with it next year, Andy. That X51 engine, it wasn't just in the anniversary. It was available for the 996 and 997 as well.
Yeah.
Is a peach. It is a real lovely bit of engineering.
What are the differences? Do you know? What are the detail differences?
Detail differences. Great shout.
I'll do the tech bit then.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll find out.
I've got a really lovely, after badgering the guys at Porsche Archive, I've got some really, like a really nice engine cutaway of the engine. And you can see like all the detailed differences, like the induction's completely different to look at. There's a lot more, alloy and less plastic from memory, a bit like with the 993s with a Vario RAM to non-Vario RAM. In Gen 2 form for 996, it's a 25 horsepower gain. I can't remember the torque, but I mean, even like, so 991, if you went for the X51 power kit, it's a $9,000 option. So I think that's why, put a lot of people off. I think for 996, it was about $6,500 option.
And probably on paper, it's like, oh, it's only like 20 horsepower. Am I going to feel that?
Yeah, 20.
But when you actually drive it.
Yeah.
Big difference. Yeah,
definitely. As with Porsche, as we know, it's you know, the details add up to a significantly bigger picture.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was nice. Yeah. Any what else you've been up to? You've been driving any other cars or?
Well, I was gonna say about the your Little Irish. Actually, what's happening with the problems that you had? I saw that you'd done a video this week that sort of documented the issues, but there was lots of good ideas that came up on that.
Yes, there was, and to be fair, so like I'd spoke to Chris at Rightune over it, and the danger here is obviously Chris and Joe and Mike at Rightune will advise me on the car. I have a duty to get right what they say when I then relay it to the audience.
Yeah,
the difficulty being they are professionals with the spanners, and my brain just doesn't work that way. So it's quite funny. And then we have this perennial thing. If you do a video, someone puts a comment up and goes, why don't you just do this? I've done it blindfolded and whatever. And it, you know, everyone's an internet mechanic, right?
Yeah. It's worked for them, but not necessarily will work in your instance.
Exactly. Yeah,
but there might be some leads there.
Definitely. Like, and so for example, crank position sensor, everyone's saying, or I think, and as there's a collective, we think that it's a crank sensor that needs replacing. Chris and the guys at Rightune saying your engine's going to have to come out for that. And then people in the comments on this video saying, you don't need to take your engine out for that. You can do it. So I've gone back to Chris and been like, I don't want to take my engine out. I don't need to. And Chris is saying, Lee, you don't have to take the engine out. The point we're making is if that bolt gets stuck and that snaps off when we're trying to take that out, your engine is going to have to come out. Okay. And to be honest with you, knowing Little Irish, it fights you all the way with any work, like the amount of times they've had to get the blowtorch out and heat things up and everything. So I think the reality is it will probably need to come out as per Sod's law. However, at face value, you shouldn't need to. So there's a couple of problems swimming around with that car at the moment.
And you've got those vacuum noises, haven't you?
Yeah, weird, so that weird thing, and it's getting worse and it's getting louder. Yeah, and we were driving down the high street, Laura and I, over at Southbourne on Saturday night, just before I saw Steve Mortimer from the DNHC in the pub, by the way. Yeah. Cutting some moody shapes on the floor, Steve. But yes, we're driving down the road, it being a high street, quite busy, and this car's making all these weird like groaning noises to the point where two people walking down the pavement were looking at us thinking like we'd hooted them. It was that loud and obnoxious. Oh my God. So it's a bit awkward. It's like, yeah, it definitely needs to get sorted. But yeah, Nick Perry at Porsche Bournemouth, who, as I said in the video, worked on Porsches for like 30 years, isn't he? He's worked at Porsche Bournemouth for 30 years. And he said, that's your carbon canister, Lee, that, you know, they do go on those cars. We've replaced a couple on them on 996s over the years. I don't know if I have to replace the whole thing, because it's like, I've looked up, it's like £300 part.
Yeah. That's so interesting, because I replaced the carbon canister on my 993, and that's like I think £295, something like that.
Yeah.
And a carbon canister is, all it is basically is a plastic tube with a spring in it and some carbon pellets.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anything particularly clever or, you know, sophisticated. It's just sat there to recover the fuel vapors.
Yeah.
And I replaced mine with a part that's made for a Mark One Golf that was £9.98, I think.
And really? Yeah.
Absolutely perfectly. So,
wow.
You know, if you're, it's worth looking into. Maybe we should look into that.
Definitely. Well, it comes, there's a wider kind of argument there, isn't there? Or story about like Porsche tax on parts and whatnot.
Absolutely.
And particularly with that being an early 996, you know, yeah, maybe there is a little bit of crossover.
Yeah.
With its, on paper, there is no crossover. It's the first completely new 911 since the original, right? But you know, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have a look on the old parts diagrams and see what it looks like.
Interesting.
See if we can work something out.
Yeah, that'd be wicked. Yeah, that's it. Like that, it would be good, because that is, there's that. And then obviously, this like problem, which could be vacuum related, you know, coming from the back of the car, from the engine now. Could be a crank sensor, but I don't know. I'm undecided, because it cut out when you drove it the other day when we were filming with the STR.
Yeah. I didn't know that was me or whether it was the problem with it.
No, I would say it's probably going to be the car, to be fair, because it's an easy car to drive. You know, you know what you're doing. I would say it's more than likely going to have been the car. But it was interesting when you said that, because I think it cut out on me the day before. And where the 40th has gone into storage now, that's the daily.
That's the daily.
It can't not be working really.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Talking of STRs, that sold.
Yeah.
There's so much buzz about that around, you know, how much it sold for. I think I've seen a couple of videos talking about it now.
Seriously,
on YouTube, yeah.
And amazing. So, I think like it was a real privilege to be able to drive that car. So thanks to Paul, and you know, I know we're both really grateful for that.
Absolutely.
It was a fun day out with you, Andy, as well. You know, like pedaling that car. But I guess like the sale of it clearly shows that there's plenty of life in the market
for the right cars.
You know, exactly that. To be honest with you, lots of talk. You know, people saying about how like stuffed it is and whatnot. Half the time, I don't know, it feels like those people are ones that, well, then they wouldn't buy a car if the market was on song or not, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, a lot of negativity around it. But actually, like, good cars are selling. And again, you know, like when Simon Jessop and I went into Porsche Bournemouth the other day to look at that 964 cab.
Well, sold, isn't it?
Manual, but a cabriolet. Yeah, you know, 72 or 73K it was up for.
Yeah.
Gone within 24, 48 hours. So, you know, there's life in there. It's just for the right cars, I guess.
Yeah.
So, but really
bit of a headline figure. Is it 315K for it?
Plus, you know, buyer's premium. So it was, I don't know how you feel about it. For me personally, it was really nice to drive that car because, as I said in the video that's on YouTube currently, that was our cover car for Total 911 issue 100.
Yeah.
And for context, we've just sent this week issue 238 to print. So it's a long, long time ago. It's just over 10 years ago. In fact, Magnus finished the car. We put it on the cover because Magnus was our guest editor for our 100th issue.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, it went up for auction at this lavish Pebble Beach ceremony.
Yeah.
And went into the Ingram collection, you know, and the money that it went for now is kind of, it's the same sort of money as then, which I just think that's great for everybody. Yeah, the buyers getting a fantastic car, it shows there's life in the market. I can imagine Magnus was pretty pleased, you know, brand Magnus is still still going. So just good news all round, Andy, you know?
Yeah. I've just remembered actually, do you remember the little sticker that I did for our little fruit stick group?
Yeah.
Our local drivers club. That's got the STR on the back of it.
It has, isn't it?
Yeah. It lives on.
Yeah, really cool. I said in our NineWorks Redo presenters WhatsApp group for myself, you and Max, I think the three of us should do a bonus works pod. I know one has just dropped in the last week for the guys and girls there, but I think we should do a bonus pod just talking about our top three cars that we've driven this year, because there's a lot in the mix and maybe some things outside the box that people might not think. So if you're up for that, we should do that.
Yeah, I'm up for that, definitely. Talking of other cars that you've driven, you've been, what's the word? Busy with other cars, haven't you?
Yeah, really, really busy, Andy. So as you know, you kindly helped repatriate the 993 Carrera RS back to Simon and Polly last week. Great to hang out with those guys. I said to Simon afterwards, I could talk to Simon and Polly all day.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, yeah, proper, lovely.
Yeah, proper petrol heads and whatnot. And yeah, look, lovely example that. 73K on the clock, left-hand drive, Japanese example in speed yellow, comfort spec, albeit with the Club Sport front lip and rear wing. Beautiful thing. So again, Simon Jessop and I shot it last week down the road that you've coined as Tartt's Boulevard. It's fantastic. But where the trees, is, you know, beautiful country road, arrow straight, tree lined, and obviously where it's autumn at the moment, the leaves matching almost perfectly the speed yellow paintwork. Yeah, so we got some brilliant shots for the mag.
Look forward to seeing those.
And it was great. And just to drive that car for the day in dry conditions, because obviously the previous go in that was during the 993 rally when it was biblical, wasn't it? Biblical rain. So what a car the 993 RS is. Completely reminded me as to how awesome it is. I think two things. It's probably in the top five 911s for me in terms of driving experience. But also, I think it might be, for me, the best looking 911, full stop.
Wow.
Front and rear.
Really?
Yeah, honestly, like the more I look at it, it's like this thing is just achingly gorgeous. And particularly where it had the Club Sport biplane rear wing and then that kind of deeper front lip with like the curled edges. As an overall package, it works really well. We've said before about, you know, debating what's the best rear. And I can't remember if we said this with Simon and Polly or on last week's podcast. I can't remember. But, I was saying before, there's been conjecture where lots of love for a 996 C4S rear end. I personally think a 993 turbo rear end is stunning.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like it doesn't, I wouldn't say the front matches it, right? For both of those scenarios, whereas a 993 RS is a full package, full 360. I just think that thing looks gorgeous. It looks fast when it's standing still for a start.
It does, yeah. It sits so well on its wheels.
It does. It does sit so well. And it looks fast, but in an elegant sort of way.
Yeah.
In a way a modern RS just isn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, size-wise as well, it looks so tiny, doesn't it, on the road?
It's like a toy. I mean, in the 90s, that thing must look like a 992 RS does now.
Yeah.
You know, but by today's comparison, when you look at a 993, it looks like a toy, really. And it's kind of how it feels to drive. It's super sharp, super pointy. I mean, the geo on that particular car was fairly relaxed, which was nice, to be honest. Very road, very user friendly, but so sharp and pointy, and its directional changes are completely different to any 911 before it, without a doubt. And I mean, that again, it's nearly 30 years old, that car. It is too fast for the road.
Yeah.
Sensationally
fast. You
don't
need any more, do you?
No, not at all. I mean, we're talking about, you know, that X51, and I'm not saying the X51 is the same as a 3.8 RS engine. However, like the similarity is it's that punchy mid-range, but then also really toppy. So it's almost seemingly, when you're revving the 993 RS, there's no weakness to that power delivery. Just the powertrain is so strong.
Yeah.
So that is a phenomenal car. And I'm really, really grateful to have been able to drive that again. That is a top, top, top Porsche 911.
Nice. So from top Porsche 911 to one that you've been probably, the most anti out of the three of us, I'd guess. Your current daily is a Dakar.
The dubious daily Dakar.
Yeah, what have you thought about it? I think you've been driving it for the last couple of days. What do you think?
To be honest, Andy, I'd love to have swung past yours today to like get your sentiments on it.
Yeah.
I ran out of time and couldn't do it. But like from the outset, completely dubious as to the legitimacy of the Dakar as a UK car. I totally get that there is a reason for it in the States and the Middle East. And actually, when we were in the States in the autumn, I saw a fantastic one at San Diego, matte black, and on its roof bars, it had a surfboard. And I just thought, that guy's got it. That is the lifestyle car. He's got it. Whereas here, we're a tiny island. Land is hard to come by. I don't get how you can use it as intended. So as we've seen over the months and as people have taken delivery of these cars, well, I think the consensus in the UK is, well, okay, it's, you know, we're not climbing any dunes here. However, it could be a good daily because it's higher up, it's got better ground clearance, it's got bigger tires, so could potentially be more comfortable. And kind of how does that work? And first 24 hours with that car, I disagreed with that completely. And I thought, no, it's just as rough as any 992 on our terrible roads where it's got bucket. Yeah. This press car's got, I mean, the way it rides, Andy, I've made a lot of noise before about how 992s are quite crashy in the UK and they always need like this C16 spec. You know, it is slightly softer. There's no question. It is softer than a GTS.
Not, it's a trophy truck.
Yeah. If you think you're going to drive down picture your average UK urban road, which is usually terrible for quality, you know, if you think you're going to go down it like you're on a magic carpet, you're going to be very disappointed.
Okay No, that's cool to hear.
So you know, there's a little bit more rolling tire noise as well because you've got these big heavy Scorpion all-terrain tires and less sound deadening, but it's not a deal breaker. It'd be like being in a 991 because there is a difference between 991 and 992 in that department. So you know, and then again, the press car's got bucket seats, and Mrs. K Sibbs, when she got in the car last night, said, I couldn't live with this daily. Yeah. It's a nightmare to get in and out of. It's a fair point, to be honest. Do you know what I mean? So, dubious. Is it a good daily? I don't know. It's a 45 grand difference between a GTS and a Dakar, obviously before options and whatnot. And you think, well, it's a lot of money for a lift kit.
Yeah, really.
Because you could daily a GTS. However, then today did some like light off-roading in it, and it's phenomenal, Andy. And this is where you go, right, I get it. And you definitively could not do what I've done today in that Dakar in a GTS.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
You can see the worth of it, but is the worth UK possible, I guess?
This is it. And Steve in the works chat of the DNHC today, as an owner, done, you know, I think 3,500 miles in it. Steve, we're really grateful for you sharing your story with everyone today. You know, been out on track in it as well, on the Scorpion all-terrain tires, which I think's incredible because the car definitely behaves differently with those tires compared to a Michelin. Of that there is no doubt. So he loves it, and he said it's like the most versatile 911, and how Porsche's cracked it. So that was really, really interesting for me. My overriding thing, and I'm gonna do a video on it where I'll discuss things in a little bit more detail, but I kind of feel like you could argue it was I'll spin it positively. It was a masterstroke by Porsche in giving it a numbered production run. It's 2,500 for worldwide markets. The number's a bit random. It doesn't mean anything. It's of no significance. I wonder if going forward to say 992.2 or 994, when that follows on, could the company just offer it as a Dakar package on a GTS? Yeah. I think that's possibly the way to go. If you didn't have what is now like a numbered production run car in its own right, would there be as much clamor for it? Possibly not, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting, but it's horses for courses. It's different lifestyles. There'll be people in the States that it completely fits in with what they're doing. Stephen, he's made it work for him and his lifestyle, and is loving every second in that car, which is fantastic because ultimately, Stephen's paid the money for it. So,
yeah.
But definitely, warming up to it, I would say.
Warmed up to it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so negative.
Not so negative. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
But this is the whole point of, you know, I'm a journalist, right? You need to try these things. So that, the whole kind of point of press cars, I guess, and everything else. So I'm very grateful to Porsche GB for lending that to us. They will obviously know my stance on the car. So, yeah, really, really grateful of the loan.
Yeah, nice.
Cool, man.
Cool. Right, shall we get our guest on?
Yes, we absolutely do that, absolutely. So this is, I think you were chatting to Dave, Andy.
Yes, I've been chatting to Dave for a while. Keep meaning to meet up. I think we met at Porsche by the Lakes, but I thought it'd be good to get Dave on and find out a bit about trimming. I think it'd be useful, probably for everybody.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, let's get Dave on. Dave the Trimmer, or Dave Goodwin. It is Dave Goodwin, isn't
AKA,
it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
But I think you are fully known as Dave the Trimmer. That is your new surname.
Yeah, it's now. Stuck. Oh, Christ, it's got to be 15, 16 years ago. And I did a job for someone and he said, I've got you in my phone as Dave the Trimmer. And it stuck and stayed.
That's awesome, to be fair.
It's descriptive, isn't it? It tells you exactly what you need to know.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you've listened to some of our podcasts over the last few weeks, but we've sort of started up a bit of a new regime to break the ice with our guests. We asked them four questions, and we thought we'd do those with you. And it's, what's your first, worst, best, and next cars?
Okay.
With one rule, your first and your worst can't be the same car.
Okay.
So let's kick off with your first car.
So the first car is... yeah, it's a bit difficult, really, because I didn't have a driving license at the time, and I bought a car off of a pal.
That sounds like a first car to me.
Yeah, and I probably had it 2 years and did nothing with it apart from try and rewire the headlights, but didn't drive it, had no MOT, I didn't have a license, but that first car was a Renault 5 GT Turbo.
Wicked, that's proper, yeah. That is.
Yeah. It's not a bad car to have never driven.
Yeah. So I paid 400 quid for that and sold it for 400 quid 2 years later. So that was the first car. But then the dream was always I always liked classic minis. And my first car after I passed my test was a 1983 minivan, which I run for probably 2 or 3 years. Yeah. Cool bit of kit that was.
Like it, nice. And what was your worst? As you said, it can't be your first.
No, I think my worst car, which I only owned for 6 weeks, I think, was a Mark II Audi TT 3.2. So the V6 or the VR6 or whatever.
Yeah,
that engine in it. But the problem with it was it had a DSG gearbox, and I thought on paper it looked. Yeah, all the figures add up. It was a faster car, but it was horrendous. Yeah, got part X that in for an E46 M3 in the end. So yeah, it was quite the upgrade.
That's a good move. Yeah, very good move.
Definitely. You've had one of those, haven't you, Lee?
E46. I sold mine just before they were starting to kind of kick off and get a bit popular again. I feel like E46s. Yeah, like the M3s. You used to see them everywhere. Like, but now they've just fallen off the face of the earth. It's like, you know, a fair few of them, like mine, had like quite high miles, 120k on mine when I sold it. But like, I used to see them all the time, and now you just don't see them at all. So we had first, we had worst. So yeah, best car then, Dave.
I think it's the 964. I mean, it's always been on the list of cars to get, and yeah, best car, and still got it. Don't even plan getting rid of it. Yeah, it's such a cool car.
How long have you had that now? It's not that long, is it?
Three and a half years, maybe.
Yeah.
Let's we'll touch on that 964 in more detail shortly. So we need your next car to finish then, Dave.
Next car. So I've currently got an Abarth 595 as the daily, which is a fun, brilliant little thing. But I am thinking of a Golf 7.5 GT.
Okay. Yeah. Again, like a Golf, you just can't really beat it for a daily driver. I don't think. Never own one, mine, but like so many people have had such good examples over the years, and it's the car that will kind of do everything, really. And it's still pretty iconic, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
Wicked. All right, Graham. Well, there's the four questions.
Would I be right in saying that you worked for Aston Martin Lagonda at some point?
Yeah, so I worked there for about 2.5 years on production, doing DB7 and Vanquish. Varied bits, like from seats to shelves, doors. And that's actually where I met my wife many, many years ago, over 20 years ago now, So she's a trimmer as well and sewing machinist, so she does a bit of work too.
Oh, really? So does she work at your place?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So proper family business going on.
Yeah,
I didn't realise that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And how did then that developed into the business? You were made redundant from there, or you were working somewhere else?
No, I worked for another trim shop in Milton, Cranfield Way. And I worked there for probably 4 or 5 years.
How did you get to this stage where you've got clearly a lot of people with a lot of Porsches knocking on your door?
Business started 11 years ago now. I was doing 4 days a week in my garage at home. So doing sort of 2 days a week at home, building up a bit of a customer base, mainly in the TVR world. I did a lot of TVRs for a specialist in Northampton. Yeah. About 11 years ago, I was made redundant, and it was like, oh, okay, what am I going to do? And I got a little bit of a redundancy package, and I put all that money straight into a unit, rent, like deposits, and fit out. And with that client base, I'd really built up, I sort of rung them and just got the word spread. And we've never had a quiet day since. It was really weird how the transition from being made redundant to going self-employed was so great. It was a weird situation, but it's paid off really well.
Nice. Yeah. So like what, over the years then, would you say it within the kind of spectrum of Porsches has been like the most common job that you've been tasked with?
Most common job, and it's probably the last 5 years, is like houndstooth inserts. That's quite popular. And we're still doing them, but it's a good way of breaking an interior up, and it looks really good. Like, it just works on Porsches in general, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm kind of starting to get a bit bored of them. It's probably controversial to say that, isn't it? I feel a bit bad saying that. Sorry to everybody out there that's got houndstooth interiors. I feel awful now.
Yeah, you'll get some emails now.
I guess like with the seat inserts, as you said, it's a nice way to break up the interior, but actually like it's not like root canal surgery like within that interior. So it's like it's something that's kind of, I'm saying this like I know remotely what I'm doing, Dave, but you know, like I guess for you it's kind of bread and butter stuff, but actually like has quite a big and dramatic effect on the interior without like pulling all sorts apart and door cards out and everything else, you know.
It's big impact with sort of low cost, low time away from your car as well, because we can, you know, do inserts 3 or 4 days, whereas if we're doing a full retrim, we're going to have your car for 6 to 8 weeks, sometimes longer. So yeah, it's certainly a way of improving the look of the interior without breaking the bank.
I'd be curious as well to know, like, especially where you're saying that your business is, you know, comfortably over a decade old, in that time the market value of classic Porsches has obviously gone through the roof. So there's obviously the stock, as people have reinvested in the stocks, a lot of these tired, tatty old interiors, SCs, 3.2s and whatnot, that perhaps once upon a time weren't worth a lot, value goes up, it's worth putting some money in. Have you seen like a lot of those coming through, or 930s, where you've it's been kind of a sympathetic restoration of the inside?
Yeah, definitely. We had a 930 turbo in recently. God, I owned it for many, many years and never garaged it. So there was like issues with dashboard shrinking and like front seats drying out and stuff, and yeah, like just doing small jobs like that. But then yeah, the SCs and 3.2s, we do full fit outs on them just to bring them back up.
So it's like for those that want like that sympathetic restorations or something that like looks stock, how hard is it to find new old stock or yeah, like original product or whatever,
or the materials?
Yeah
That is a bit of a battle. So yeah, finding a houndstooth or cash cloths, that type of thing. That's relatively simple. But if you're trying to match some of the older Porsche leathers, they had like a little bit of a semi-gloss sheen, and finding that in a black is quite hard. And some of the vinyls are obsolete now as well. So that is a bit of a challenge, definitely.
Yeah.
And there is suppliers in Europe that does have some of that stuff, but then you've got Brexit that's making things incredibly expensive by the time it lands as well. You've got duties and stuff. And so, yeah, it's hard, or a parcel goes missing at an airport or something. Do you know what I mean? It's more hurdles for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's so difficult to almost get them to even think about communicating or to want to sell stuff to you. Found that, yeah, it was easy before. You could buy whatever, just go on their website or give them a call and they'd be up for it. But yeah, there's definitely a barrier there now, isn't there?
No, it is bloody hard sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, again, the other thing is, Dave, and you'll kind of have a lot more experience this than certainly we will, but like with interiors, where do you stop? I mean, obviously talking to a guy with 400 hours worth of Alcantara shoehorned into his 964, but it's so difficult. So, you know, I'm talking with like the classic crowd that, as we say, want to like rejuvenate is probably the best way forward, best description for it. But, I mean, like, for example, I remember seeing like, I can't remember the color now. It was like a light metallic blue 964, and the guy on the inside, he kind of left everything, but put these like bright, and it was this like dark blue interior with like these cream. It was all factory. And so for that reason, because it was quite different to other cars at the time, he wanted to keep it, which is fine, but his bolsters were completely worn. So then like the driver's bolster just had this strip of like bright blue leather going over the top. And like, it looked horrendous because it wasn't in keeping with everything else, but he was really like loathsome to take everything else out because it was original. And it's just like a constant, I think, a balancing act between how far do you go, how far do you kind of protect originality versus improve and whatnot. I don't know, do you have much input on that, or is it like completely down to the customer?
I do try and steer or help customers out in terms of making decisions. Like, as a minimum, if a driver's seat's completely worn out, I would say yes, we can drop a paneling, but it does look odd. However, if you trim both front seats, you've got a matching pair, and if we get the colors right, it's going to tone in, and with time it will age and look nice. Whereas if you just do a panel repair, that's always going to stick out. But then, like, we did a 993 recently and we did a full retrim, but we left a few bits because they were factory and they looked okay. Dashboard, door tops, quarter tops, rear shelf top, they were all fine. And he wanted them black anyway, so why trim something if it's not necessary? So, advice. Yeah, I think you have to give advice rather than just nod and smile and say, yeah, we can do that. I don't like doing that. Best advice is always best, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's like the same, and we've had like people from like body shops on before and everything else. And like, as we've said then, you know, cars, they're only original once. And, you know, in the same way as a body shop kind of has a duty to, where possible, like protect original paint and stuff, I guess, like, yeah, you know, what you're doing with the classic stuff, you're sympathetically minded and mindful of the history of these cars. And as you said, you know, the easy option in a way is to just rip everything out, but actually that's kind of taking the story away from the car, I guess.
It's a funny old subject. Like, people talk about patina quite a lot, don't they? And you know, there is a fine line, I think, with patina. It has to stop somewhere. Patina is where it's like with leather seats, you know, you might get some creases and grazes, but when people talk about patina, when there's holes and stitching falling apart, that's not patina. Do you know what I mean?
So that's F-U-C-K.
To be fair, that was gonna be my next question, Dave, to be fair, which you've answered admirably. It's like, yeah, where is the line? But yeah, like, holes and rips and tears, that's not patina at all, is it? That is
nappy. No. But yeah, like, you know, there's people that will restore a car and they'll spend thousands of pounds on a full race spray, get all the rust chopped out, And then they go, I want to leave the interior because that's got nice patina. Well, you could have left the paint then, couldn't you? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It works on both set bases. In my eyes, it works in both ways. You know, I don't know why people get so hung up on this patina on an interior. You know, if it's shot, replace it.
Mm. Yeah, without a doubt. It's quite interesting what you're saying, like with your 964 and everything's Alcantara. Like a lot of the 997s, really, where like Alcantara from factory started to come into those cars a bit more, and like mm-hmm. steering wheels, shifters, and whatnot, they just look a bit tired and a bit knackered. Is that down to people not looking after the material, or is that just like a buy of the product, basically?
It's down to lack of cleaning, and if you stay on top of cleaning Alcantara in terms of steering wheels and touch points in the car, they do go shiny, they do go a little bit like smoky, hazy, do you know what I mean? And it's just sweat build up, and you can clean it. Alcantara is a very resilient fabric, and if you stay on top of it with a microfiber and some general sort of upholstery cleaner, it's fine. We've saved quite a few steering wheels recently. A Mercedes dealership contacted us, and they said that we've just sold a car. It was like an AMG. A builder had run it for 2 years, and it was like a bricklayer or something. And this steering wheel, it was so white. Do you know what I mean? It was so white. But we spent a couple of hours deep cleaning it, and it looked brand new. And that they were like, "Can you retrim?" I was like, "We don't need to. Just leave it with me. Let me clean it." And it was fine. And that's the point. Just stay on top of cleaning, and it'll last a very, very long time.
Yeah, I agree with that. With Alcantara, we've got a sofa at home, and the amount of stuff that's seen, but you can clean it and it comes back. It's all good.
Yeah.
A lot of people sort of throw Alcantara away thinking that it's done, but you can bring it back. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, do a different sort of podcast, surely. I just
take myself down some rat hole there of night. Oh my god!
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I guess like the other question then, something I've always wanted to know is like where you're taking these interiors apart.
How much money do you find down the back?
Well, there's definitely a question coming up on that, but like. What do I want to say? The early stuff has a reputation of being like extremely well built. I mean, like the leather, like really like thick. I'm thinking of a 993, 964 stood the test of time, whatever. Like 997, for example, you know, 20 years newer, and the seats looking a bit shinier, a bit like more knackered more quickly. Is that a thing? Mm-hmm. Were there nice materials on the older stuff, or is that complete? I've made that up, and that's hearsay.
No, you're right, and that's purely because the more modern cars tended to use a smoother leather, and that does crease up. It is softer versus the earlier cars, which had a thicker, stiffer leather with a textured grain, and it just held up better for longer. It's all it is, and that's a fashion thing, I'd say. It's got more popular for people, or people's vision of leather should be smooth and like a Nappa finish, whereas back in the day it was all about this natural or embossed grain and it lasts longer, definitely.
So
it's not a cost thing then, as to actually there's the stuff in the older cars is you know, all the stuff in the newer is a lower cost point. It's just down to the finish on it affects the wear of the material.
Yeah, a softer leather wears faster. Yeah,
yeah, right, okay, yeah, because it's again like the early like millennium era Porsches, like Cayman, Boxster 911, 996, 997, that era, and to be honest, even like some early 991s, to be honest, if you think that car's 10 years old now, some of the early examples on the like the bolsters, you know, like the typical bit where they start to go, there's a real kind of real shine to those now, and the leather steering wheels, whereas the air cool stuff, to me, I just think like it's really stood up by comparison. Definitely. You know,
yeah you're right.
Yeah.
The older stuff's better, isn't it?
The older stuff's better. Yeah. So what is the weirdest, if you can dare repeat it, what is like the weirdest thing you've ever found in a car then?
No, I haven't got any cool stories for you.
Like,
yeah, no, there's
Right, that's the end the podcast now then. That was the highlight.
You was leading up to that, weren't you?
Yeah.
We've obviously found coins and notes, a Mont Blanc pen and all random bits, but anything a little bit risque?
No. Oh my god.
Yeah, that is a shame. I was saying on our WhatsApp group for Nineworks, so for our works conversation with our works drivers, I popped a thing up on there. So I've got a Dakar press car at the moment from Porsche GB, and went round to the front, opened the thing up, so I was chucking all my cameras in there, or going to, and whichever journalist has like had it before has not cleared all their stuff out, and like genuinely there's a set of pants in there. So
and some
old socks and some Oreo biscuits or whatever, but it was the pants that were concerning. So I've had to fire this email off to say obviously I'm not going to touch any of that, but just so you know, someone's left their pants in the car, and it ain't me, you know. And this is a car I've had for like 48 hours. I thought with 12 years on me dealing with interiors here, you'd be well up, but yeah.
No, you've trumped me.
Yeah, it's the greatest show.
I was really hoping for a good story then.
Yeah.
Nah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to get onto is like the seats, really. So like there's like different debates as to like which is the most comfortable sports seat and bucket seat and everything else, but like, do you ever have like retrimming of those, or is all that fairly standard apart from like the seat sensors? Like, do you ever like add extra bolster or like extra cushioning or something, or is that that's not really a thing for the newer stuff?
No, you can't really do it. It just doesn't work because, you know, the covers from factory wouldn't fit back over the bolsters, so it becomes very labor intensive. You start bolstering up a seat, so then you have to repattern the covers. It's not a service we offer. If someone wants to bolster up a seat and they've got standard seats, then I'd advise get some sport seats, like optional extra sport seats, or go down a pole position route or another Recaro, that particularly in the Porsches. I've got a set of Recaro A8s in mine just because I think that's the right period look for my car. I've kept my rear seats because I've got kids, so pole positions wasn't an option, but I think the Recaro A8s just suit that era of car.
That's interesting then. You're saying don't mess with the bolsters, basically just buy a different seat that's more suitable to your lifestyle and needs.
Definitely
Interesting, because Andy, I remember you on your 993 previously, you'd had like, or the previous owner had like adjusted the seat bolsters, so they were comfort seats.
They were originally comfort seats, and they had the frame was modified to make them sport seats, and then had the foams from a sport seat put on them with new covers.
We've got a set of work doing that, but that's the limitations of our sport seat upgrade. If the parts are available, then we'll definitely do that, and we're doing a set now.
This was done years and years ago, probably 10 well probably 15 years ago now, so I guess the parts are probably readily available then, probably not so much now.
No, sort of modifying 964 sport seats to make it work.
Talking of sport seats, the sort of hardback sport seats, they seem always to be trouble from like the 993. Mm-hmm. Sport seats, they always seem to come up away, like they peel out. I'm sure there'd be loads of people that'd be interested in, you know, what's the score with that, and is there a way of fixing it, or is it just something you've got to live with?
No, you don't have to live with it. There is a special little Recaro clip. I think they might be 50p each or a pound each. And you just pop them on the little rail and really sort of squeeze them in, and that's your fix. Done. Yeah, it's like a 5-minute repair, it's not a big job.
Oh, I'm sure that'll be worth many a person listening just for this podcast just to hear that.
Yeah,
I've seen so many of those sports seats where the trim with, you know, the leather pops out of the back.
Yeah, it's quite common on them, and they wrinkle quite quickly as well. Do you know what I mean? If you look at a lot of them 993 hardbacks, they're quite a wrinkly seat now. But when we retrim them, we tend to sort of nip them in a little bit and make them a bit tighter.
But little
tricks of the trade when you learn what as you go along.
Yeah, yeah, it's good to know. I wonder, and I'm kind of speaking selfishly here, Dave, but like, have you done much with like 996 interiors? And the only reason I ask is, as I'm sure you know, like, interiors, you know, it's a bit of a letdown on that car, and like, particularly like the Gen 1 cars, just like use of materials, just like, yeah, the quality just doesn't seem to be there. I mean, Andy, you were in my Gen 2 the other day, and we were talking about the difference between Gen 1 and Gen 2. Yeah, it's
pretty massive, isn't it?
It's stark, you know, and like those early, or yeah, the Gen 1 996s could really do with a lift. Do you get much of that coming through, or kind of not yet, or?
We've done quite a few 996s for RPM on their CSR program.
Oh, really?
The first one we did was their silver car, I think it was, and we did the Pasha, black and white Pasha with it, the Alcantara.
You've driven that,
that was an eye-popping interior, yeah. And it certainly didn't look like a 996 when we finished.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, we did a feature on that for Tottenham 11 magazine. Probably, yeah, 6-7 years ago now, I'd say. But that was, that was wicked. That was lots of Pasha in there. It was a comprehensive makeover, which is what is what the guys wanted. I vaguely remember that was, did Darren put that in his car afterwards or something? Or he bought the car but sold the interior? I can't remember what it was.
It got moved about. I think Darren did have it in his car,
It was definitely bright. I remember seeing that car. It was driven by the owner. This was a few months later. It was driving down like the Finchley High Road. I saw this car come in, recognised it as a CSR, and like, I could see like the interior from the outside, like popping out us. It was really cool. Like, but yeah, again, like totally different expression, and shows you can really kind of do something with a 996. But like, I wonder how popular that is, because lots of people saying, "Oh, interior is a bit drab, like lets it down and whatnot." But I wonder, like, how many people then actually act on it and seek to do anything. And if they have, is there any like cool stuff that you can drop in by way of inspiration to us, maybe?
Yeah, like on some of the CSR cars, we didn't do full trims. Obviously, we did that first one just they could show people what is available, what can be done. Versus we've done quite a few Alcantara dashboards and door inserts and seat inserts just to break up that sea of black leather, because they are quite a black interior, aren't they? And just breaking it up just that little bit makes it exciting. But yeah, we've done quite a few bits and pieces like that. Trying to think if there's any other ones. Another one we did was a Savannah interior, so it was all beige, like all the biscuit colour. Yeah. And we broke that up with some houndstooth, and that really come out nice.
Okay, that's not a bad idea, actually. Like, yeah, like houndstooth with Savannah. Like, I can see how that would work, to be honest.
Look, good, yeah, it's green. I can see your little brain going there, Lee.
Well, we said before, didn't we, like, you know, that nephrite green back in the day, people wouldn't go near it. And if a car was specced with that interior, it would probably have an adverse effect on its values. Whereas now it might even tip it the other way. If you see a little 996 or 986 Boxster with that interior, providing it's like well put together.
Yeah.
People find that really cool, don't they? You know, so.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It is quite a cool colour, in fairness. That in a black car, I'd probably run it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. What do you see as like the future of the business then, Dave? Like going forward, is there any like big challenges that you see coming up? I mean, obviously there's been an explosion of resto mods over the past few years. Wonder if that's going to continue, or, you know, are people going to be reinventing modern interiors? Where do you think it's going to go for you?
I don't think the resto mod scene is going to disappear. I just think, yeah, it's just quite a cool vibe, isn't it? Like a resto mod 911, if it's done right, looks nails, doesn't it?
Yeah. And
I definitely think we'll keep on seeing that. And there's still going to be that factor of people buying a car. Like, I had a customer recently. He's coming in next year for a retrim on a 993 turbo. He wanted a 993 turbo in black with black leather. It's hard enough trying to find a 993 turbo without that spec. He found one, it's got grey leather, and we're putting a black interior in it. He's not fussed about resale. He just wants that car to be the way he wants it. Why not? There's always going to be customization, I think. And that's, but we'll do a stock retrim as well. you know, we don't rule that out, but I definitely think there's definitely a market for customization, resto mods, and making people happy.
Yeah, that's it ultimately, because as we said at the start of the conversation, that's where you spend all your time, so your interior might as well look good. So
absolutely,
yeah.
I'd like to step back a little bit to the 964, and you said, I think you've been about 3.5 years. What took you there to the 964? What was the reasoning for wanting one?
So working on cars for like 20 years now, and the 964 has always been something I've thoroughly enjoyed working on, and owning one has always been a dream, really. And putting my stamp on one rather than just having one that's a generic out of the factory 964. I always wanted to do a modified 964. So yeah, I found one that needed a little bit of care and love. That's what led me to that, really.
Yeah. And it's pretty, as far as the bodywork's concerned, you haven't done much to that, have you? It's more the interior and wheels and things like that.
It's got a few. Yeah, the body has got some mods.
Okay.
Yeah, the body has been modified. So it's got a 993 wiper system in it. So it's got the narrowed in pivoting points.
Yeah.
Rear bumper's been completely smoothed and smaller plate recess. Front bumper, smaller number plate recess. 993 door handles.
I was talking to RS rear screen. Loads done, isn't it?
Yeah. It's had a few bits.
And I think the piece of the resistance, though, is the interior. So you've got a Alcantara interior that's sort of got like a Pasha print on it.
That's it, yeah. It's laser engraved, Pasha-inspired interior. So it's really subtle, but yeah, the details are there. I put over 20 metres of Alcantara in that car, which is insane, really. 20 metres, everything, all bar 4 footwell mats at Alcantara.
Oh my God, I didn't realise there was that much in there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like almost a full carpet delete with Alcantara everywhere, like down to like the vanes on the heat events, they're all trimmed, handbrake button, full handbrake, all the seat tilters, they're all trimmed. Yeah, it's the dials, like the bezels on the dials, all trimmed.
Wow. Yes. So, I mean, there's so many questions there, Dave. It's unbelievable. So, like, when you got the car, and I think by your own admission, you'd want to do something fairly special inside, right? Like, it's a great promotion for your business, more, you know, as much as it is a great place for you to sit. But from the start, were you thinking, I'm going to go Porsche exclusive plus here? And like you said, do the vents and stuff? Or was it like a gradual process over time? You think, well, I've got a couple of hours, I might as well do the handbrake or whatever, you know?
Yeah, so I bought it and then I gave it thought. I didn't just rush into it. So I gave it some serious thought and then sort of itemized it, wrote it down, and right, this is what we're doing. And you've nailed it. I wanted exclusive plus. So it was my take on an exclusive, I guess. And knowing full well, no one's ever going to ask me to do it because I did 400 hours on that car.
Oh my God. Really? Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Jesus. How do you find 400 hours to do it when it's your job, though? That's the thing. So a lot of people.
After work and weekends. That it just chewed up so much time.
Full on obsession.
Yeah. And then some of the Saturdays as well, I had my kids in as well, and they were helping glue things up and stuff. So sort of it felt like they were part of it too, but obviously didn't let them trim, but like doing bits and pieces.
Yeah, that bits that you felt awesome. They could do.
Yeah. I guess as well, like, you know, we've said on this podcast a lot, I know I have in the past, about like seat choice and how when you're speccing a car, that's often overlooked, but actually like it's where you spend 100% of your time, right? It's behind the wheel. So it's got to be comfortable. But like that kind of ideology definitely extends to the rest of the interior. You know, when you're buying the car, when you're driving it, 100% of the time you're on the inside. So like, I guess improving as many aspects of that as possible is only to the benefit of the ownership and driving experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great place to be.
Lots of good touchy feely.
Yeah, I've had pals in the car and they're like, oh, we stop at a petrol station. It's like, is it okay to eat in here? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like a forbidden, no eating, no drinking, but it's cool. Like I take my dog in there, and yeah, I still treat it as a car interior. And if it goes wrong, I can sort it out.
Yeah, right. You know a guy. Yeah, wicked.
I've noticed that you've sort of started up a YouTube channel recently with sort of tips and tricks and sort of highlighting your what's been going on in the workshop. Seems to be going quite well.
Yeah, so a pal of mine who is does all the videoing and stuff, Patrick, he worked for a company called Maguire's as their social media and did all their videos and stuff. During COVID, he sort of moved away, did some other stuff, and he reached out to me, said, "Dave, if I'm going out alone, can I pop over and do some videos?" I was like, "Absolutely, Patrick, you know what I mean? I'm bang up for it. I've wanted to do it for a little while." And so, yeah, we've experimented. We've done 4 episodes, I think, and thoroughly enjoyed it. However, running a business and trying to do YouTube content
not easy.
Isn't a great mix. It's not easy. Yeah. So, you know, if he pops over for a day, that's a day of me working really slowly and talking to him whilst trying to meet and greet customers or take telephone calls. And you know what I mean? So it's on pause, and I'd like to do more, but it's just time.
But
thoroughly enjoyed it. Fantastic feedback from everybody that's watched them as well. So
yeah, some brilliant little insights into what a trimmer has to do to keep their customers happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a task. And another thing that I saw also is that you've had Mike Brewer in recently, having some work done on an Audi RS6 or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we did that. We did the RS6. That was aired last night. We've done a Focus seat repair. And in between all the... We've done quite a few other jobs for them as well, which is quite nice. They, you know, as a repeat customer, it's quite nice to have them on board, helping them out with their projects. Yeah. And he's a great guy. You know, he's very, very funny. You guys have interviewed him.
We have.
Isn't he so funny? Do you know what I mean? He just can't stop laughing, but
he never stops. Yeah. I can't remember what you said after the interview, Lee. It was something along the lines of he could have kept on going for hours.
Yeah, big time.
It's like, just like a dynamo, isn't he?
Yeah, it was one of them where the interview was done and we were thinking, right, you know, better let him get home to, you know, whatever. And it was like, we couldn't get away. He was like, oh, he's getting his phone out. Look at this picture. Listen to this. And look at that. And he was like, he's proper petrol head. And this is the thing. It was just like, it was a pleasure to hang out with him for a bit. Like he clearly, like once his camera crew stops filming, he is still absolutely that batshit crazy about cars, you know, which is wicked. It's proper genuine.
Yeah,
it's lovely, isn't it? And fanatical about Porsches, which doesn't really come across on Wheeler Dealers because he's trying to be, you know, the guy that likes everything. But yeah, he loves a Porsche, doesn't he?
Particularly an old one, like, you know, he'd probably be hauling one of his old projects round to you soon, I imagine, if he's not done it already. So,
He picked up that 964 Turbo recently, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
So there is talk of doing something with that.
Nice project coming your way.
Yeah, that would be quite cool.
Wicked. Yeah, thanks for your time, Dave. I know we just kind of dipped a toe in the water, really, into the worlds of interior trimming and uplifting and restoration and all aspects of it. But, like, really appreciate your input to it, because you're the first person we've spoken on the subject, to be honest.
Yeah, there's not many of us.
It's a bloody good thing for you then, right?
Oh, yeah. In a good... Well, good and bad, yeah. I mean... I want to share my, like, the trade, you know what I mean? I want to teach people, and I'd like to employ more staff, do you know what I mean? Because there's loads of work out there, and I just want to sharing what I've learned over the last 20 odd years would be, I think we need to do more of in the UK, do you know what I mean? These trades need to share it, because who's going to do it after?
Otherwise,
do you know what
it's
going to
die out.
Great, yeah.
Like, AI is definitely not going to take over our trade. You know what I mean? There was Elon Musk the other week saying how, you know, AI is going to take over every single job. No, it's not.
Very true.
Love that. Dave, yeah, thanks very much for joining us on NineWorks Radio, mate, and best of luck going forward as well. You know, it goes without saying. So
yeah, thank you very much, guys.
Cool, man. Yeah, thanks to Dave for joining us on NineWorks Radio. I guess we've just got a little bit of admin.
Yeah, Andy, we should sign off. We've got a few new guys and girls. Let me just find my little piece of paper. A little update. We have, first up is, we've spoken about Steve already today. Steve Pidding, who's a works driver from Epping in Essex. He has the Dakar, 992 Dakar. Also has a 992 Carrera GTS Cabriolet, a Carrera, and a 3.2 Carrera Coupe. So a nice little trio of Porsches. Perfect little trio, I'd say. Cover all the bases.
Yeah, definitely. And again, interesting with the GTS and Dakar. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Garage, that's super cool. Super cool.
It'd be interesting to hear from him, actually, what he feels there. Because it's the same car, but it's not the same car, isn't it? It's like, what are the differences from his point of view? Yeah, maybe we'll question.
Yeah, I mean, you know, aside from the cab versus coupe scenario, which he's got there, it says 992 Carrera GTS. So I assume that is the rear-wheel drive GTS, obviously the Dakar being four. So yeah, it shows it works.
Right, next up is Dylan Sandoval, who's a works driver based out in the USA. I've sent you a little message to say hello. I haven't heard back from you, but it'd be lovely to hear back from you if you would like to do so. Next up is Chris Carter, works driver at 993 C2S, which was on the 993 event. He bought that from Paragon not so long ago. I'm sure we've discussed him before, but he's now a works member. Had a few different Porsches before, including 997 Carrera, Cayman GTS, loved that one, he says, 991 GT3 and a 981 GT4 that has gone old school and back in a 993. So yeah, great to have you, and which has got an X51 power kit on it.
Awesome. Yeah, Chris knows indeed that.
We've got another Steve Carter, works driver, based in Brighton. He's a friend of Lee on Instagram, which is called Flat Six Project. I think I know who that is, but I'll need to check that. He was down at the Legends Driver Club the other day having a good chat, and his friend suggested that he joined up. So he has done. He has a 718 Cayman GTS 4-litre. Very nice. And he says also a 13-year-old BMW E90 M3. And a Mini Cooper. Great to have you aboard, Steve. And I'll get you joined up to WhatsApp in the next day or so. And lastly, Rory Williams, who brought his 993 along to the 993 event, has upgraded from privateer to works.
Top man. It was lovely to have a chat with you, Rory, on the day of that 993 rally. So yeah, thanks to the upgrades. Thanks to the new members for joining the good ship, Driven Not Hitting Collective, yeah. I guess.
Thank you, everybody.
Wicked. I'm going to dive in the absence of Max. There's a gem of the week that has particularly caught my eye because I've seen this car being built for months now and it's finally come on the market. It's an ice green metallic 911 Carrera 3 Targa by the guys at Phil Raby. So as I said, this has been worked on for a while. So the Carrera 3, I mean, that's a... it's a rare car, really. There was only two model years that the Carrera 3 was in place. It preceded your SC, Andy, and it was wedged in between that and the 2.7. So we're looking really at 76 and 77. You'll notice that they have a different fan. I think it's a five-blade fan. It's five or six. I'm sure it's a five-blade fan.
Instead of the 11.
Instead of 11, yeah, and it's the only air-cooled 911 anyway with that fan, so it's quite interesting. It's had a full-on respray. I mean, the advert, which is on the Marmots Marketplace, so go and take a look, but it says it's had a full restoration at a cost of some £50,000, and the work done, which I saw happening, was the glass-out respray, full engine rebuild with new clutch and stainless steel exhaust system. So, I mean, if you want a really lovely example of a fairly rare car, then that is it. And again, ice green metallic, super cool kind of period correct color. It's got the black Carrera side script down the side as well. It looks awesome on black Fuchs. So take a look. It's with Phil Raby. It's up for $89.95.
Nice, nice. I do like a bit of ice green.
I think it's an awesome colour. Just yeah. suits that G-body. I think we were talking about this earlier in the year of like best colours. I mean, yeah. when we did our 60 years of 911 and for that G-series era, ice green metallic, I just think looks awesome. It just, it suits that
does.
Car
does.
Quite nicely, nice. I think. Yeah. Really cool.
Cool. As Max is not here, I don't think we've got any coffee shops to spread the love to.
Nada. Absolutely nada.
Yeah. No. Shall we revisit that next week when Max is back?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Next week, we are recording at RPM Technic. We've got really cool. So we've got, after this episode, we've got two more to be recorded. For the general public, we've got a fantastic evening at RPM Technic. We'll bring you highlights of it here on Nineworks Radio. We're diving headfirst into the Porsche marketplace. We want to find out what's going on. We want to find out what's coming up for 2024. We want to find out what to keep an eye on, what we think is going to go well, what perhaps might not, and just get expert input. So we've got not one, not two, but three different experts joining us for the evening. So we're in for a treat. We've got Jonathan Franklin. We've got Henry from Lakeside Classics, and we've got Greg from RPM Technic offering up our expertise and answering questions from the Driven Not Hidden Collective. We've got 50 of them joining us for the evening, Andy. So
feeling nervous. Really cool.
Nerves, yeah, yeah. So yeah. Really, really cool. And then we'll have our season finale, and in fact, our year finale, where we're going out for a curry, basically, with members number one and two from the collective, the people that started all of this madness.
Yeah, yeah. So a big thank you to those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We better buy that curry, I reckon, Andy.
Yeah, I think we should. Absolutely.
So, yeah, super, yeah. super exciting. But then again, I think we should do a works bonus pod where we look at our cars to best cars we've driven this year. So there's a few stories. I remember we've done some great stuff, Andy, to be fair. So yeah. It'd be nice to revisit that.
Yeah, yeah. Be a good episode. Cool. Beans. Right. Let's sign off.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, never a chore, my man. And see you next week.
Alrighty.
This episode was brought to you by our very kind Driven Not Hidden Collective. If you would like to join the collective to get further access and rewards within the Nineworks community, you can do so at patreon.com/Nineworks. You can also support us by leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app.